Welcome to Right Here in Mass. We're a weekly podcast that features individuals throughout the Bay State who are on our radar and should be on yours. From the Berkshires to Boston, Cape Cod and the islands, tune in to learn about who you should know right here in Mass. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Right Here in Mass. I'm super excited to be joined by Ashish from Set 5 today. New Jersey born and bred, Ashish attended Tufts University and graduated in 2009 with a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science. Following Tufts, he held engineering roles at various companies before co-founding Set 5 Consulting. He's an OG team member and partner at Set 5, and his idea of being outdoorsy is drinking on a patio. Ashish, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Awesome. I'd love if you could start off by sharing more with our audience about you and what you do at Set 5.
Yes, I'm one of the partners here at Set 5. So day-to-day responsible for software development, product development on behalf of our clients, and then also sort of doing sales and business development for Set 5, Set 5 agency itself.
Awesome. So with software development, let's talk a little bit more about that. What exactly does that consist of? What clients, types of clients do you work with? What are different projects you partner on? I'd love to hear more about it.
Yeah, for sure. So our clients are typically companies between like 10 and 100 people in size, typically non-technical. So the companies don't tend to have sort of like a product function or a software engineering function. And then we sort of work with them as a partner to do that product development piece, the actual software development, and then sort of running that software with them as a partner. So you can kind of picture like an ad agency that they sit down one day and they're like, you know, it'd be great if we could sort of build software to help us do X. They sort of realize that they don't have that capability in-house. They connect with us, and then we work with them to figure out what they should build, sort of why they should build it, and then kind of build it with them.
And so that's actually a good example of having the marketing agency thinking about, or an ad agency thinking about types of software that they'd want to build. What are other types of softwares or product development projects that you've worked on to kind of give our listeners an overview of how you're really able to support these companies?
So we've done sort of like a lot of stuff across a lot of different verticals. A lot of stuff that you sort of think about as like software as a service type projects, where someone is like, hey, you know, we're doing a bunch of stuff in Excel, or there's a bunch of stuff that we do via email. We want to transition this to more of like a productized software thing. Then on the other side of the house, we've done some data work. So sort of traditional data warehousing, building sort of data analytics pipelines and workflows to help people sort of like make sense of their data and use all of this data that they're collecting to do stuff better, right? So sort of like a data-driven decision-making.
Nice. And so taking a few steps back, what actually made you want to pursue this career and actually start Set 5? I'd love to hear more about your journey in that aspect and kind of transitioning out of the engineering roles that you previously had into co-founding your company.
Yeah, I mean, the founding story is not that exciting. My business partner and I both went to Tufts. We were graduating in 2009, so sort of like the tail end of the global financial crisis. We kind of like sat down. So we had been freelancing through college, sort of just picking up gigs here and there. In 2008, we sort of like started Set 5 just as like a, here's a company that we can be signing these contracts with just in case one of them goes sideways. It won't be like us being personally liable. So 2009, the sort of hiring climate in the Boston area was pretty brutal. No companies in the city were really hiring. It was only companies sort of like out in Burlington or out like past 495 that were sort of like still hiring. And we kind of just got the sense that like working there was not going to be fun.
Yeah.
So we were like, well, why don't we try and do like this agency stuff until sort of like stuff turns around, or, you know, we can figure out like something better to do. And then like years later, we're still here.
So were you doing both the agency while you held your other previous roles, kind of having as like a side hustle ultimately?
Yeah. So like the previous roles were more internships at smaller companies. And then sort of like in that 2008, 2009 timeframe, they ended up not being able to raise money. So those internships did not turn into full-time offers because the companies just didn't have any money.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're still sort of like doing the agency stuff like while I was being an intern.
So, yeah, so I think that's really smart that you had that kind of idea in the back of your head, like we should probably secure our own futures considering we can't really rely on these companies, so to say. And I think it's a really great approach that you took with that to kind of forge your own path or confirm your own destiny by being able to start building Set 5 and then be able to focus on that when the internships unfortunately didn't turn into those full-time roles.
Yeah, I guess that's one of those things, like looking back, sort of like, especially given the current climate of just sort of like the layoffs and people not being secure in their jobs. Yeah, that was one of those things we kind of just lucked into.
Yeah. And so with the recession that was happening, did you find that there were new needs that arose for companies that came out of it that were looking for services from an agency like Set 5 was offering? Like, was there anything that allowed you to be kind of innovative, if that makes sense, just due to what was happening within the economy?
So I guess looking back, like, we didn't really benefit from any sort of like recessionary trends. I think the biggest benefit we had was just being small and being scrappy, you know, like not a lot of overhead. We were more than happy to sort of like meet with someone on a Friday and start writing code on a Monday versus some of the other agencies that were drawing out signing contracts and discovery processes and all that stuff. And that's still like something that we pride ourselves on doing today, just sort of like being small, being lean, being scrappy. I think like thinking back to sort of that 2008-2009 timeline, it was sort of brutal for a couple of years, but then by 2012-2013, stuff sort of like unstuck and you started seeing sort of like the venture money coming back and just the vibes were better.
Yeah, I can imagine. And so with that, how are some changes that, or what are some changes, I should say, that Set 5 Consulting has gone through during that time, or how has it continued to grow and evolve throughout the years?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think so. Thinking back, something that we started off this company doing a lot of sort of like MVPs for startups. That was sort of like the only place we could find work. So companies that were trying to sort of build like an MVP of their product, and they realized that they needed some sort of a development help. We were like more than willing to sort of like do anything for anyone. Turns out those companies like don't have a lot of money, and if they do, they're kind of like not thrilled to part with it.
Yeah.
So we did some of that for a while, which was like interesting, learned a lot, definitely built some credibility. And then we sort of moved over to more like working with more established businesses to do more product development that was like revenue generating or stuff that was like going to be from day one valuable to the company versus more like, oh, we'll go raise money against this thing. So I guess the types of projects have maybe gotten a little more boring, but the types of business have gotten more stable.
Yeah, which is, I think, is important. And so yep. Do you tend to work within like a similar group of industries, or are you kind of like all across the board, really whoever is looking for something of what you offer and just being able to support them?
Yeah, it's sort of across the industry. Like, we haven't done a good job of like niching down into one vertical. So I think the types of clients we find ourselves working with best are sort of more aligned on the type of company, the size of company, and who's sort of involved in that company. So usually like smaller companies where the founders are still actively involved or directly involved, and then there's just not a lot of bureaucracy. So companies that are more like flat organizations where someone that we're talking to has the authority to either sign the checks or, you know, there's one person above them that's just signing the checks versus sort of like big lumbering organizations where there's multiple layers of management. You never really know like how the internal politics will play out. So yeah, we try to stay away from those companies.
Yeah, I don't blame you. This might be a little bit of like a broad or vague question, but does a client ever come to you thinking that they might need you to develop a product or software for them, but then they actually need something completely different, if that makes sense? Like, they have an idea in mind of what they think they need, but then you talk with them and you're like, actually, no, you need this instead.
Yeah, I say that does happen somewhat frequently. I think what happens more commonly is we'll have a conversation with someone and they've got sort of like this idea in their head of like what they want to build, you know, because they read about something in like a Harvard Business Review, or, you know, they read like something out there, and then we'll sort of start talking to them about like how their business works, how this thing they're going to build fits into their business. And then it becomes very clear that like this is going to be a low impact thing. Like, this tool that they're looking to build is not going to move the needle for them, either on like a cost perspective or like a revenue perspective. And then we kind of all have a come to Jesus moment where we're like, you should not spend all this money to build this thing that's not going to generate you any revenue. Yeah. I think that happens somewhat more commonly.
Well, I think that's great that you're transparent about that. You're not necessarily just building something just to build it. I mean, you're having those candid conversations with your clients and being really honest about what they can expect and whether or not it makes sense for them.
Yeah, so that's something that we've always kind of prided ourselves on as well. Like, we'll tell you if we think it's a bad idea. I mean, obviously, you as the client know best at the end of the day. But if you're proposing doing something that we think is like objectively a bad idea, we'll let you know.
Yeah, which is great. And so with that, I can imagine that most of your clients come to you because they're looking to probably save time, money, or resources when it comes to some part of their business, or like you mentioned, being able to make more money. Is there any other instances why someone might come to you looking to develop software, develop a new product?
I think probably the one last big use case is sort of like creating processes or creating more like formal processes around stuff that there's creating formal processes around stuff that they're sort of doing right now that's more ad hoc. So if you think about businesses that sort of like run everything via email, you know, like all of the processes are like locked in like one person's head, and like that person's on vacation, it's a big problem for the business because they're kind of like, how do we move this contract forward? We don't know like what the next step is because this one person's always been doing it like themselves. So I think we see some use cases there where people want to build maybe not full SaaS products, but just sort of like those rails or like those processes more formalized into some sort of like software thing to help the business like do stuff. And I think that's become more and more of a interesting use case as like people are starting to retire. You know, people that are like in their 60s now who they've spent the last like 20, 30 years like using computers and using digital stuff, but maybe it hasn't been to the point of like writing everything down or building software tools to help these processes be more formalized.
I think that's a really good idea, and something that I wouldn't have even thought of is the idea of like, if someone were to step away from the business, whether it's permanently through retirement or selling the business or going on vacation, is there something there that could help to support everything that they've been doing in their absence? So I think that's a really interesting use case where people can partner with you in order to help build out that side of their business and ensure that things can still run smoothly without having to rely on that person ultimately.
Yep. Yeah, that's something that we're sort of like trying to explore more. But I think the challenge has been like, it's not a revenue generating thing then. So people sort of see it as a cost center, which is typical right. For some of these tools, right? Because it's like, if it's not going to make you any money, you're kind of like, well, why am I going to spend all this money on it? But then Sue from accounting goes on vacation and you're like, okay, maybe we should have spent some money on that.
Well, that, and I mean, you probably see this all the time with your clients, but like, time is also money. So even though using it might not necessarily make you money, I mean, it's opening up time in your schedule to then focus on those revenue generating activities and having more capacity within the time that you have open to do other things, because that piece or the software is being able to take care of it for you.
Yep, that does make sense.
And so with AI being a really prominent topic over the past year or so, I'd love to hear how you've incorporated it into projects, if it's something that clients might feel hesitant about, or if they're really big advocates for. I just kind of love to hear your thoughts about it and how you've used it.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I'll preface this by saying I'm like an AI curmudgeon. Or I guess in my personal opinion, I feel like there's been an incredible amount of hype sort of around like the OpenAI ChatGPT just stuff. At the end of the day, I don't think it's going to take, or over the next 3 to 5 years, I don't think it's going to have such an outsized impact as people are predicting. I mean, I use ChatGPT like day to day, like, you know, I'm always like putting stuff through it. But I don't think the future is going to be like a chat box where you just ask ChatGPT to do anything for anyone, right? But I think there's going to be measured deployments that are non-chat related that are going to be really interesting. So I think like the data extraction piece is really interesting. So being able to feed it sort of like a blob of text and be like, you know, extract the recipes from this text or extract what happened in this conversation. I think that's interesting. I think the automated summarization is really interesting as well. So being able to just dump in like 10 pages of text and ask it to sort of like highlight the key points in that text. I think another aspect that like I've seen some people start talking about is like using it as like a rules engine. So you can just define some rules, give it sort of like the inputs to the rules, and it can kind of like sort of assign what the rule should be. So I think on the client side, we definitely sort of, when ChatGPT first came out, a bunch of people were very interested in building like demos. I think some of our clients kind of like saw the writing on the wall and they were like, okay, we know this is not going to be the end all be all, but we need to have an AI strategy. So just like build something.
Yeah.
So we've definitely built like a good amount of stuff against the OpenAI API, but not much of it has actually made it into production just because I think it's like an 80-20 thing where like getting something working is very easy, but then that last 20% to make it sort of polished enough to put in front of like customers is pretty difficult.
Yeah. And how do you see that changing for you over the next few years?
So I think as the tools get better, and I think as sort of like the user experience, as the best practices around user experience for deploying the LLMs sort of evolves, I think what will happen is the LLMs will sort of get deployed more in traditional software rollouts where it's like a feature or it's like hidden behind some other stuff, sort of making sure that like doesn't go off the rails. So I think you'll see less and less of like, here's an open text box where you can just type whatever you want and like hope it's going to return the right results. It'll be more like structured inputs and outputs, sort of like you see today in like a traditional software product.
Yeah, interesting. Can you share some use cases with your clients where you've been able to develop a software or build a product for them that has like drastically changed their like overall operations or revenue or success or anything like that without necessarily giving like identifying information about who the client might be?
So there hasn't been anything on the AI side just yet. I think something mm-hmm. that we're exploring actively in the AI side is sort of like using AI or using like open AI to write marketing emails and marketing text messages that are like hyper specific and hyper segmented. So down to like the user level for previous purchases. I think that one's interesting. I think that one has some legs on it. So being able to sort of pull your previous purchases and then sort of like hyper segment you based on sort of like what you purchased and like your purchasing habits and write you a text that's like specific just to Ashley.
Yeah.
We'll see if that moves the needle.
Yeah. No, that is an interesting one. So a question I just thought of that actually relates back to you and within your role within Set 5 Consulting, it sounds like you've started to shift more into kind of like that CEO role of working on the business and not necessarily in it all the time due to what you mentioned of focusing on business development and sales. So I'd love to hear more about that, how you kind of balance both pieces of being able to manage client projects, but then also being able to have the time to work on your business to continue moving it forward.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we've like historically been really bad at that.
Yeah.
But some piece of advice I got was like, you know, if you're tracking time, which most agencies should, is like add your own agency in the time tracking software and make sure that you're hitting like those numbers month over month. We've done a horrendous job of that to date. But I think something that like seems to be like a reality for agency folks is like it's feast or famine, right? Like either you've got too much work and not enough bodies or not enough work and too many bodies. And we're sort of in that second season right now. So more time for sales and business development. But I think we're really trying to sort of like understand how to build a better pipeline and sort of do a better job of like keeping warm leads warm so that we don't find ourselves in this position again where we're scrambling to do sales and BD.
Yeah. And what have been some things that you've learned besides what you've shared? Like, have you tried new lead generation strategies that you think could be really fruitful? Or I know you've chatted with me briefly about like pursuing new partnerships and pursuing new services to offer by partnering with other companies. So I'd love to hear more about those types of ideas that you've pursued and how they could have potentially impacted you.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it's taken me a really long time to understand that like, in this business, the highest impact stuff is just building personal relationships with people one-on-one and building like a high trust relationship before someone spends money with you. Obviously that's like not very scalable, but sort of now with the AI unlock or like with the AI capabilities, something that we've been sort of toying with is instead of sort of building the software and then having our clients do the work with the software, just sort of delivering the work sort of. So going back to that marketing email example, instead of building the software to let our clients send those marketing emails, we would just deliver the marketing emails as like the work product, which I think is like an interesting sort of maybe change in how we think about like selling software or what software development looks like.
Yeah.
But I think on the partner, yeah, so going back to your question more specifically, we sort of like we spent some time looking at like cold outbound, but that's never really been successful for us. I think just because it's so generic, like when you just get an email from someone being like, hey, we can do software development, it's like, okay, you get one of those like once a day.
Yeah.
And then the partnerships have been tough for us, I think, because of like because of sort of like where the price point is and sort of like how we would fit into partner workflows, it's been difficult for us to sort of like find great partners. And I think the In the past, we've had some partners that have worked out really well, but then there's sort of like been scope creep on both sides of the partnership, where one person tries to move into what the other person's doing and then vice versa. Maybe just because of the margins or maybe because of the nature of the work. But so yeah, that's been tough for us as well.
And just being able to kind of think of those new opportunities to pursue and whatnot. So you've been in Set 5 or been working for Set 5 and having founded it since 2009. So that's all, I'd say that's probably like 15 years now. Is that right?
I think that's right around there, yeah.
So what would you say is next, like coming up next for the next 15 years? Like if you were to think about what you'd like to achieve with Set 5 or how you'd like the next few decades to look like, I'd love to hear more about your future plans and what you're thinking of offering or providing.
Yeah, for sure. So I think our near-term plans in the last like 3 to 5 years are sort of just to bulk up the headcount, sort of get to that like 20 to 25 people, just to improve the sort of cash flow, cash position, and just sort of have more flexibility in terms of like what we can do. And then we always toy with sort of building a product and just getting away from the services business. But I think we've finally accepted that's just not it's just not going to happen. But I mean, I think sort of like with that bigger cash position, I think it opens up opportunities around like investing or becoming sort of like the money arm of some of these sort of early stage companies. So I think that's something we might see once we have some more cash flow. So if you think about like the guys that built Basecamp, for example, right? Like 37 Signals, like they got big enough and then went sort of like directly to product. But I think like looking at sort of their investing approach as well is sort of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting to think about. And also, speaking of the business, with you having a co-founder, I'd love to hear how that experience has been, because I know some people are really big advocates for having a co-founder and some people are a little bit more hesitant. So I'd love to hear how you've been able to make that so successful, having been almost 15 years in business, and some things you've learned along the way that you can share with anyone who might be thinking about starting a business with someone else.
Definitely. I think personally, sort of like looking back, having a co-founder was like incredibly valuable. I think just having two people's insights and two people just to sort of split the load of like doing stuff day to day has been really valuable. My business partner's parents were also successful entrepreneurs, so they were able to give us like a ton of advice the first couple of years, sort of like from tactical stuff all the way to like more strategic, how you should do this type insights. I think we've been really fortunate to have a great relationship this entire time. I realize that some people do not have the relationship, but we were friends like through college, and then when we started this company, it was just sort of natural to be like, all right, let's do this together. But I think one big piece of advice is definitely sort of like clearly define who's going to do what roles, then let that person own that whole function. I think the worst thing I've seen is when two co-founders sort of like try and do everything together, and then no one is sort of like the boss. And I think that leads to like a lot of confusion within the employees, a lot of confusion within partners, even, so because they don't know who's speaking for the company and who's like the end all be all. Sort of the decision making process. So sort of like clearly defining roles and clearly sort of knowing like who is the boss within those roles. I don't think it needs to be sort of like one person always makes the decisions for the entire company for all functions, but definitely at the function level.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point of just having those clear roles defined and being able to communicate that to your staff so they understand who's kind of responsible for what. And I know that a lot of people often talk about facing the opposite problem of like one person doing everything and the other person like not holding up their weight of the bargain, which can be another tricky thing to navigate if you feel like someone else is kind of getting the benefits without necessarily putting in the work that they should be in order to get those benefits too.
Yep, that makes sense. Yeah, at least from conversations I've had too, I think when people are going to start traditional startups where they're sort of like seeking outside investment, I think people get stuck in that situation a lot where one person's able to quit their jobs, the other person's still working full time, and then they're still technically 50-50 partners on paper, but one person's obviously in the business a lot more because they're not working a full-time job. I think that's true. I think that situation is very tricky. I'm not sure like what the best practices are around that, but
Yeah, no, definitely. And with people who are interested in getting into the tech space in general, I think it can feel overwhelming and that there might potentially feel like there's a big learning curve that comes with it. So if you were to give advice to someone who's looking to kind of get into this field or get into this sector, what advice would you have for them with just getting started?
I think that's an interesting question. I think I would sort of pick a pick an industry or vertical that you're interested in, and then sort of understand sort of like how technology works in that, right? So like if you're interested in healthcare, figure out like where you want to sort of like add value in the healthcare ecosystem, whether that's like digital health startups, whether that's traditional diagnostics companies or pharmaceutical, and then sort of figure out like where you can sort of like do technology or what skills you can bring to sort of to that, right? I think to your point, yeah, it's really overwhelming to think, oh my God, like how do I get into technology? But you know, technology now is everywhere, right? Like every company is basically a technology company, or there's a technology company in every vertical, right? Like there's software companies that build trucking software. There's software companies that build any type of software you can think of. So I think figuring out sort of like what your passions are separate from the technology, and then how you can sort of take those passions or take those skills that you have and then apply them to tech is what I would do.
Yeah, I love that advice. And beyond that, speaking of passions, do you think that there ever might be a day where you start like another business that also might be in the tech space? Like, do you find that you're multi-passionate and have other ideas that are kind of brewing in your mind outside of what Set 5 does?
So that's a great question as well. So there's definitely some friends of mine who always try and pull me into being like, oh, we should start like another tech company, or we should like buy an existing software as a service company. But I think it's incredibly difficult to do two things at the same time, especially two things well. So I finally sort of accepted that, like, no, at least for now, Step 5 is what we're doing to sort of generate that cash. But I sort of have started looking at some angel investing, which has been interesting, just mostly from a networking perspective and also just to learn about different companies and sort of how different companies work, which has been really fun. And then hopefully we'll make some money doing that as well. But chances are not high.
I'm glad that you brought up the angel investing, because that was one thing I wanted to ask you about, which we have listed in your bio in the show notes, which is the fact that you're an angel investor with TBD Angels. So what made you want to become an angel investor, and how did you come across this organization with really just getting started?
Yep. So sort of going back to what we were just discussing, for the last couple of years, some of my friends had sort of like floated the idea of like buying a existing software company, which seemed expensive. And again, just sort of like putting all of your capital into one risk pool, right? So like not being able to diversify, because you can only really buy one at a time. So then last summer, I was kind of like poking around LinkedIn, just sort of like seeing what some of my contacts were up to, and noticed a bunch of them had listed TBD Angels on their LinkedIn. So I just clicked through and I was like, wow, interesting group. It seemed like some cool people with some cool portfolio companies. So yeah, that's kind of how I got wired into that. The idea was sort of being able to diversify the investments versus sort of making one big investment in like buying an existing company, but we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah. Are you comfortable talking about the portfolio companies that you've invested in and kind of sharing why you wanted to invest in them, or what made you kind of, or what encouraged you ultimately to make that investment?
So I've written one angel check sort of separate from TBD into a home service software company, actually, randomly. One of my friends, Christian, he moved down to Austin sort of during the pandemic, right before the pandemic, and sort of started doing some home improvement stuff, realized that there was just no good general contractors, decided to start a general contracting company. This is someone that's just like multi-talented entrepreneur, can do like five things at the same time. So he started realizing that these contractors were all using either no software platforms or something that was not really purpose-built to what they were doing. So he was like, I'm just going to start this company. That's kind of like the first big check I wrote. And then on the TBD side, I've only written one check. It's into a financial wellness education platform. Sort of like typical for most small angel checks, the pitch was really compelling. The team sounds really great. And I think there's like a lot of upside in sort of like what they're looking at.
Yeah. And I think that's really a good opportunity for you to be able to support these companies without necessarily being the one to like play such a big role in the company itself. Like, you're providing such a great resource to them by being able to help invest in them and support them, but it kind of gives you the opportunity to flex those interests that you feel really passionate about in a different way, rather than just actually starting the company yourself and running it.
Yeah, I think that's sort of what the feeling is too. And then hopefully one of the thoughts was also just sort of being able to see sort of all these different companies, we'll be able to sort of cross-pollinate some ideas. So like being able to be like, oh, we built this tool in like the ad tech space, it might be relevant in like financial tech or financial services, and being able to be like, hey, you guys should check this out. Here's what you should go check out, since we've seen all these different industries and what's worked and what hasn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of passions, I feel like anyone who's an entrepreneur can kind of struggle with that idea of turning their work brain off and being able to kind of shut work away and focus on other things outside of work within their personal lives and really being able to have that balance. But I know that you have a handful of activities that you really like to do, from going to the gym or practicing yoga. And I'd love to hear how you set that balance and boundaries for yourself with being able to ensure that you have the time to regroup and rest so that you can continue to show up to work and really make a difference.
Yeah, I feel like I'm one of those people that does not really have a ton of hobbies except for working out every now and then. But yeah, I think for me, like growing up playing sports, just like being active is like important just to sort of like feeling normal, which I realize sounds a little strange. But yeah, I mean, I think being at the gym for like an hour and a half every couple of days with no phones and no distractions is really nice. And just being able to, I guess now once it's nicer out, being able to go for a run with no notifications, no distractions, just like you out there, just sort of like seeing what's going on.
Definitely. And what are your favorite things to do in the Boston area? And what you would you say your favorite local businesses are to support?
So local businesses. So it's at Set 5, we take lunch very seriously. So we've got like a big board in the office in Cambridge where we sort of like see all the restaurants we've gone to. We sort of like rank which ones are moving up, which one's moving down. We've actually even got like a Slack channel dedicated to sort of like what specific orders people got.
My gosh.
So yeah, some of the favorites in Central Square are Viale. Oh, they stopped doing lunch, but they're great. And then Plow and Stars is also like a big favorite. And then at home in Winchester, big barbershop guy recently. So the Tonsor Lounge downtown Winchester is great. And then also the First House Pub in Winchester is also great.
Nice. I love that. Ashish, this has been such an awesome episode, and I've really appreciated having the opportunity to have you come on and share more about what you do at Set 5. So I'd love it if you could share with our listeners where they can find you online in case they'd like to connect with you further and learn more about what you do.
Yeah, definitely. So set5.com is probably the best place to start. And I'm on Twitter at adata02.
Perfect. And I'll link to those in the show notes. That way our listeners can click through and connect with you from there. But thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Right Here in Mass. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed recording it. Be sure to subscribe, leave a review, follow us on social media, and share our podcast with your network. See you next week.